Welcome to Season 11 of Bite-Sized Blessings. And for those of you who are counting, this is Episode 101. In this episode, I interview Nancy Smith. I met Nancy at a party that we were working together, and I think you all know me. I will ask anyone for their story, and I asked Nancy, we got to know each other a little bit, and she let me know about something that had happened in her life. And I thought, you would be the perfect guest for this podcast. She agreed, and so here we are. This story is about what we will do for those we love, what sacrifices we make, how we will show up, and how we will give back to those in our lives that are so very important to us. I want to thank Nancy for being so generous, for telling her story, and I want to thank all of you for all of the notes I received after releasing my own episode, episode 100. But thank you to all my listeners and all the sweet emails and wonderful comments I've received along the way. So now, let's start season 11 and episode 101 of Bite-Sized Blessings.
And he asked me about 10 years before he needed it. He said, I'm going to need a transplant because otherwise I'll have to be on dialysis. And then dialysis only lasts, it's only effective for a few years and you get re-diseased. And so it would extend his life to get a kidney rather than dialysis. Because of the disease of diabetes, your kidney gets, even if you give someone a kidney, it only lasts a certain amount of time. And then you have kidney disease and, you know, failure again. So he asked me, and then I said, yeah, I would. I mean, I want to tell the story about the kidney transplant because it was so meaningful and so incredible for all of us, my brother and sister and I. But we were, I think, going through what we went through with my dad getting sick and dying, but we were super bonded. And it was that time, my dad died in 1967. My brother was the first one to leave home. He was a hippie. He went and took LSD in San Francisco. He was, you know, such a great older brother. He turned me on to all kinds of wonderful music and concerts and living out in the woods. And it was just, and so the, we were really bonded. And we kind of grew apart a little bit because my brother moved to Sweden when he was really young. And so then, you know, traveling there for my sister and I, when we were, didn't have much money when we were younger, was, you know, a thing we couldn't do that often. But we still all remained, you know, close and have sort of been close all of our lives. I remember they picked me up from school when my dad died because I went to school that day. And we were my sister's Volkswagen and we all just held each other for like 15 minutes. And I just remember I was so happy I had them. And so fast forwarding, you know, to my brother lived in Sweden for almost 50 years and lived out in the woods, out in the country. I mean, it was exactly what his dream was. He had a shoemaking and shoe repair business. He was so creative. I mean, when he was 19 years old in Encino, where we grew up, he was making furniture and leather goods and selling them at the hippie Whole Earth Marketplace. So he was just this huge influence in my life. And my sister and the three of us, we went on these road trips together and then lived in Northern California and Santa Cruz and, you know, Sonoma, and just did this really different path. None of us went to college. We could have. My dad left a trust fund for us to go to college. And we just all wanted to, part of it was what we went through, but just all wanted to go on an adventure, you know, doing that sort of hippie lifestyle. And Rick went and did it in Sweden. And lived in the same house for many, many years and did almost everything himself, like had sheep, you know, sheared his own sheep, made his own sausage, made his own vodka, made shoes, made leather goods. And he just had this, he chose a really great life for himself. And he got diabetes when he was 14. So my dad was still alive. So the trip in 2005 for my sister and I to go to Sweden for me to give my brother a kidney was the story that I told you when we first talked. And it had a lot to it. I mean, it had the bond and what the three of us spending time together and me getting to do this for him. And he asked me about 10 years before he needed it. He said, I'm going to need a transplant because otherwise I'll have to be on dialysis. And then dialysis only lasts, it's only effective for a few years and you get re-diseased. And so it would extend his life to get a kidney rather than dialysis. Because of the disease of diabetes, your kidney gets, even if you give someone a kidney, it only lasts a certain amount of time. And you have kidney disease and, failure again. I'm not very scientific or medical about this, but that's it sort of in a nutshell. And so he asked me, and then I said, yeah, I would. And then about 10 years later, he said, I'm asking you again, fresh. Doesn't matter what you told me before. Now it's going to be time soon. And do you want to do it? And I said, I do. I didn't have to think about it. I mean, he was so important to me. And I felt like I only need one kidney. And so we made a plan. And I went there in May of 2005 to be tested and make sure that we were a match. And all, I think we were a blood match, but we were also a tissue match, which is even better. And then they wanted to make sure that I was healthy enough. I was 51 years old. They wanted to be sure that I was healthy enough to do it. And I was. We got there and hung out with Rick for a little while and went to the hospital again. And we had a room together. If you're alive, donor, you have a room together in this kidney clinic. And it was the most multi-ethnic, multiracial group of people. There was almost no Swedes that worked there. It was like one of our favorite guys was Ahit, was a Thai guy. And there were people, all of the health people were from all over the world. I think our surgeons, both of our surgeons, my brothers and mine, were both Swedish women. But otherwise, it was just this incredible, diverse, wonderful group of people on the floor. And my sister, right, like the first day, asked Clara, my brother's surgeon, who all three of us had big crushes on. She was just the coolest woman. And if there was somewhere she could use a computer. And Clara said, well, our office is right across the street from their hospital room. And it was like five doctors shared an office with just desks and computers on them. Like not, they weren't gods, in Sweden. They were like working people that shared an office space. And she just said, go in anytime and use whatever computer of any of us you want to use. Even that, it was really surprising. And then Clara warned us that my brother was going to feel great after the surgery and that I was going to feel really shitty. And because he was going to suddenly have a good kidney and he was not going to be all toxic anymore. And that's exactly what happened is my sister had really fun because she was a wreck while we were in surgery. And, they have us in different rooms and she took pictures. So we have pictures of the kidney out of my body and it was kind of gray. And then the kidney sitting on his body and it was still gray. And then them hooking it up and it turning like bright pink red. And it was kind of cool to have that. I don't share that with everybody, but the pictures, but it was really nice to see like how it even just came alive, being connected to him.
When he asked you, that initial time, did you even think twice? Or was it kind of like, nope, this is what I'm going to do?
I didn't think twice. I just thought, boy, if I could do this, I'd be happy to do it. It's funny when I went to part of my 6 weeks of recovering, I went to Barcelona and met a really good friend of mine who was coming from Oakland. And so I was recovering from surgery. She had just been diagnosed a couple of years before with MS. And so we had to kind of take it easy. And we went and we had this wonderful trip and it was in the sort of winter. So it was, there was like sort of the funny Christmas markets they do in Barcelona that are very irreverent and trippy and just interesting and beautiful and observant. I mean, there's sort of everything. And then I came back to Sweden and my brother gave me this necklace. I'll show it to you. That on the back says, "Thank you, Bookins," which is my family nickname, Bookins. And he burst into tears and he said, "You know, I think this kidney, getting your kidney, my female side is coming out and I'm much more emotional. And I really believe in emotions and accessing our emotions and expressing our emotions." And I said, "Good, Rick, good." And he really was. He really became a little softer. And softer is probably the wrong word, but you know what I mean. Just being like owning his emotions and feeling his emotions.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Bite-Sized Blessings. I need to thank my guest Nancy for being so vulnerable and for agreeing to share this powerful story of how she was able to be so generous with her brother. And I just love hearing the story of how close she is with her siblings. I think we all want in our hearts relationships like that with our loved ones, with our family members. And it's so very wonderful to realize this does happen in real life. So thank you, Nancy, for telling your story. I need to thank the creators of the music used for this episode: Alexander Nakarada, Music L Files, Raphael Crux, Gloss Appel, Sasha End, Agnes Valmagia, and Lyron. For complete attribution, please see the Bite-Sized Blessings website at bitesizedblessings.com. On the website, you'll find links to books, artists, playlists, and changemakers I think will lift and brighten your day. Thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Nancy. Be hopeful. Love your siblings. Love your family. Keep going forward even when life knocks you back. And always, always search. Search for how you can be of service to others. And then you show up.